Thank you for listening to Change in the House of Pods, a podcast about Deftones. My name is Woody, and I am very pleased to share my next conversation with you for a number of reasons. Joe Falkowski is a friend, and he has some outstanding stories, a few of which are shared in this podcast, including an amazing story about hanging out with Dave Grohl that I am delighted to have at the end of the podcast. Definitely worth hanging out till the end, even through some maybe a little bit challenging audio. Sorry about that. Joe's been working in the beer industry for a number of years, and that's how I know him, through work. We've been to some shows together. We've had some laughs. But I didn't know Joe too well before this conversation. For instance, I didn't know he used to tape, sell, and trade tapes of live rock shows.
Honestly, that was my old school. That was how I paid for stuff in college, is I would have two VCRs set up, and I would dub tapes. And I had, I'm legit. I had a GeoCities website. You'd meet in these like live tape, like live video trading, like IRCs. And we would, just get in these like chat groups and you'd post like, hey, looking for this, you know. What I did is I sold them. Do you remember Root Cellar Records? Root Cellar, like Earl Root used to run Root of All Evil radio show on KFAI. Like, Root of All Evil is still a thing. I think it's a podcast now. But Earl Root was the guy, and he owned Root Cellar Records, which used to be over on Snelling. And it was like a big like metal, punk and metal record store. And I went up to him and I'm like, hey, I've got these tapes. Would you sell them? And he was like, yeah. So I would sell him. Like, I would have to go and I would get cases, and I had used Photoshop and I made my own covers and put the set lists on them. And right. I'd sell them to him for $15 a tape for one show. And then he'd put them in his bin and would sell them at $30 for the tape. And then, as soon as DVDs came in, there was no... Nobody wanted VHS anymore, and I just didn't have the money. I was a college kid. I got stuck with all these tapes. Coolest one I have, and I know I saved this one, was Pantera from 1985. It was 1985 and 1986. It's just live clips of them in clubs, and it's before Phil Anselmo was in the band, and it's Dimebag and Vinny. The craziest part is I've watched some of these, and some of it's just like nonsense, and you're just like, why am I watching this? It's so dumb. But there's one clip in one of them where Dime plays the guitar solo, the outro guitar solo from Floods on the Great Southern Trendkill. He played that in 1985 on stage, like just in him playing. To think that he held on to that for over 10 years, it would have been awesome to be able to get that to somebody to use. Cause I don't know. I mean, I've got to imagine somebody's got it, but that was my guy down in New Orleans. I don't know how he got it, but he was down south somewhere. Maybe he was in Texas. I can't remember, but I had a guy in the East Coast, South, and then West. I got the Static X demo year before the album came out. And I was like, this band rules. And nobody'd ever heard of them because, and the guy, it was my tape trader, he threw a demo tape, a demo cassette in, like, here you go. And then they ended up being something. So
as you can imagine, Joe's got some stories to tell. And as he puts it, he's found himself in some odd situations. I wish I could have included the story he told me about almost sort of getting kidnapped by Cradle of Filth, for instance. But we did talk for quite a while, so I edited down some of our conversation. Joe estimates he's been to around 30 Deftones shows over the years, and I made some notes about him at the end of this podcast. And of those we talked about here, you can find a couple on YouTube, including the show from the McDonald's parking lot that's already come up on this podcast a couple of times, as well as the audio from Deftones' first visit to Minneapolis opening for Anthrax, which was shared on YouTube by Deftones Live. Now, if you aren't familiar with Deftones Live, it's the largest archive of Deftones live shows and video content online. And next week, I'm speaking to Vezanik, the founder of Deftones Live. And I can't tell you how much fun it was speaking with him. We had such a blast. Through these conversations, I become increasingly aware that Deftones fans are my favorite people in the world. Whether you occasionally use the definite article and call them the Deftones, or if you're an OG fan like Joe and you call them the Tones, doesn't matter. You're fucking awesome. Thank you for listening to Change in the House of Pods. Here's my conversation with Joe Falkowski.
First of all, did you drink a Deftones beer? Have you had a Deftones beer yet?
No, I did. I've been so busy with work. I was trying. Sad thing is, I was at four. Oh, you've got one.
I've got. I just for special effects.
Just to let it be known, right? Well, you're in a bar, like because maybe one day in like behind the scenes, like a BTS version of this podcast, I'll release some of the video because your bar in your home right now looks amazing. You've got the flat screen on the wall and a complete full bar behind you. It makes this door behind me look like a pile of shit.
It's a labor of love. I call it a work expense.
I really would have loved to hear, and I look forward to hearing what you say, because I do want to have a conversation about the beer.
Yeah, it's
podcast.
The funny thing is, so like, I've spent 15 years in the beer industry, and it you get little preference, like you get just like anything, like you just have your preferences of things you like and the things that you kind of like. So when competitors get stuff that you want or anything like that, like. I've been working for breweries since the beer came out, so it didn't really matter to me a ton. But there was a distributor that wasn't the one I worked for, so of course I have preference over said distributor. Well, they're the ones that got the beer, that brought the beer in. So I was like, it's a little bittersweet. You're like, oh my God, that's so cool. I want to drink it. But I'm also like, I don't really want to give that guy money, So the thing is like, as a competitor, I see it all over the place. So the distributor's doing a really good job of getting it out there. And two, it's like, it's obviously selling because
I'm buying it.
Yeah, it's still around. It's got to be. And I can't imagine that there's enough Deftones fans to float that beer on a full, on a full run all the time.
I got this, bro. I already told you. I got it. I got this. I'm pretty sure. So they had a limited release of it's a Pog IPA that came out in May. It was their Swerve City. As a matter of fact, hold on. I'm gonna grab the can because I've got it right here in my office. I've got mostly Deftones things here. My office, which is also my gym, so I'm calling it the Cannery, because Jim from the office was the big tuna. So I'm calling the office the Cannery. So this is the Swerve City can.
Oh, that's super cool.
It's super 80s and like it's got a sweet ass, like it almost looks like the Saved by the Bell, like in the background.
Totally does. You know what I mean?
This was the May limited release. Dude, this beer was the beer of the summer. This was so delicious. Huh. And then this Digital Bath is an IPA that I don't remember. We only got it for like a hot minute.
Is Belching Beaver? They've got to be out of Sacramento, I would assume, right? Or somewhere near?
I think it's SoCal. I think they might even be San Diego.
Hmm.
It says Oceanside. Well, they're in Oceanside.
Oh, okay. Yeah. So I wouldn't, I was like, it wouldn't surprise me if a brewery was in San Diego. Jesus.
Yeah, right. The hell of a place to start a brewery. But the White Pony is like dropping like right now. It's like the White Pony. I think it might be like a pineapple sort of a. I don't know entirely, but I'm gonna find it and I'm gonna buy it. I know.
I'm in five or six liquor stores a day, so I'll.
You gonna find it too? Yeah. Make sure you cop it. Okay, so, for the past probably 20 plus years since YouTube has been around and I've been accessing the internet, I have been looking for Deftones concerts online. And one that has often remained in sort of like this mythological, legendary sort of status is Deftones in a McDonald's parking lot in Dinkytown, Minneapolis, which coincidentally is a block and a half from where I work, where I used to go to work every single day, right?
Right.
And only upon paying like really closer attention to it, did I realize that it was a 93X event? Like, cause there are banners.
The Edge. It was the edge,
right?
Mm-hmm.
And you were fucking there. I was there.
I hate to get the dates wrong, but it was either like right around or before, I saw them. They played with Pantera and White Zombie.
Did you go to that too? Did you go to that at
Target Center? Yeah, that was amazing. That show was like, one of the dumbest shows I've ever seen. It was, and dumb and like the holy cow, I can't believe this is like, are you serious? It was, yeah, Pantera, White Zombie, I Hate God, and Deftones. Like,
that is June. I have actually two dates for that, and I don't know which one's right. June 8th of 96 is White Zombie, Pantera, I Hate God, with Deftones at Target Center. But another date that I have for them at Target Center is August 5th.
I was going to say, I think it's August. I have the ticket stubs. So we did a mural in the bathroom of all of our ticket stubs. We blew them up and like decoupaged them all over the bathroom in my upstairs bathroom.
I look at
the ticket stubs all day. I'm pretty sure it was October or it was August. Because that thing was like a back to school jam thing that the Edge put on. And I was like, I'd seen Deftones a few times a couple times. And I was like, well, we gotta go see this. So there was a dude there and he was standing not too far from me and he was videotaping the thing. And when I was going, mid late 90s, I started doing tape trading, back in the glory days before DVDs.
What is tape trading?
So I would trade, bootleg videos. So I did, you'd meet up on IRC chats and stuff like that. And I would trade, live concert videos, bootleg concert videos. So I made friends with a few tapers and I would get copies of their tapes and I would trade them to people out on the West Coast. Out on the East Coast, I had a guy down in, Louisiana that in like New Orleans that I would trade with. And I saw this guy filming this show and I was like, I need your email. Give me your email address. I'm like, cause I want to get a copy of this. So I found the email years later and I reached out to him and I'm like, hey, I met you at the show. Can I get a copy of it? So I have a second generation copy. I got a copy off of the master tapes of that whole show. And I've watched the YouTube one. The YouTube one's broken into like two parts. I've got the entire show somewhere in my storage unit. I've got a copy of the original tape. So it's probably better quality than what's on YouTube right now. But, wow. Yeah, the best quality is the memory in my brain.
Yeah. No fucking shit, dude. You were there.
They had that homeless dude come up and like
wait a minute. Is the homeless dude on the video? I don't remember.
Yeah,
seeing
he should be. Is he in there? No, they like, it was like some drunk, like homeless guy.
I wanted to watch it like right before we had this conversation so that it was fresh, but I admittedly did not get that opportunity.
Yeah, brought up some homeless dude and they were singing him happy birthday. And then at one point they go into like, I don't even remember what they're talking about. They're like, Stefan just starts going into like, starts playing Sepultura. And I'm like, I'm a huge Sepultura fan. So I think he started playing like the intro to like Territory or something like that. And I'm like, they're going to play it. And like, no, they didn't.
That's unbelievable.
But so, yeah, it was crazy because it was a flatbed. It was like a it wasn't a stage. It wasn't set up a stage. It was like a flatbed trailer, and then they put stacks on the sides, and then Deftones played.
So they literally played on the back of a truck.
Yeah, it was like a semi trailer with no sides or anything like that. Not like it wasn't like the cool like nowadays like Warped Tour and stuff. They've got them. They pull up. They extend up. This was just like a flatbed trailer. And it's weird. It's like if you took the sides off a U-Haul and then they just played. It was so weird. And it was the best. You know, at one point, Chino's like, we've been a band for 10 fucking years. We're playing in a goddamn McDonald's parking lot.
Was the McDonald's open?
It
had to be open, right?
It had to have been.
I'm trying to think about like how that show operates in that parking lot because I've driven past it a bajillion times, right? So
they've completely remodeled that. It got a huge remodel years later, so it's not the same layout as it was before. It's not much different because you still have like was it like 15th right there, and then. Mm-hmm. Fifth or whatever. I can't remember the streets. But that corner was a lot flatter and I don't think you had the drive in, like, cause the drive in now you can only get in from
there's a wall there. Basically.
Yeah. It's a wall. It was more of a sloped like grass area and stuff.
And so is that where they set up? Like with their back to 50?
Yeah. Meters? The back to that. And then they're facing Dinkytown Liquor.
Wow.
Yeah. They were facing the west.
And that was the like already the second or third time that you'd seen them.
Yeah, it depends on when. It depends on when because I want to say it was after the Pantera White Zombie show. Like literally, I think it was like a month after. I want to say it was probably in like September. It was like right after school started. I think it was like a back to school jam type thing or something.
Yeah.
I don't know how or what. It was just kind of a weird, must have been a record label thing that they set up. And
just a wild radio promotion.
Yeah. I think it was the third time I'd seen them, because first time was just in a small club that's not even there anymore.
Yeah, what was that club?
The Mirage.
That's right, the Mirage.
There it is.
You got Anthrax. The bill. You brought the bill.
I still got it. It was hanging on my. It's been hanging on my wall since '95.
December 5th, '95. That's Anthrax, Life of Agony, and Deftones as the opener. And that's at the Mirage on 28th.
Yeah. It is. It's right now, it's the New French Bakery. It's Kitty Corner from Memory Lanes.
Oh, sure. Yeah.
It's over on like 20, like it's right down the street from Memory Lane. So like it used to be called like the Stardust Bowl or something like that. And it was just, at the time was a crappy, crappy neighborhood. So it was like, I had to kind of lie. And I was 15 and I'm like, yeah, we're going to this thing. And, it was me and a buddy went, cause we were like, it was Anthrax. We're going to go see Anthrax. And their album, I want to say the album just came out, cause it came out October 95, I think, something like that. Adrenaline. But I was like, oh, cool. And through years of drinking and some extracurriculars, my brain's not.
No judgment here, trust.
We're also talking about something that happened 25 years ago, so the details are slightly.
I'm trying to figure out what Anthrax is touring on. Like
Stomp 442.
Yeah. Okay. Here we go. Yep.
Yeah. They were Stomp 442 tour.
Who was singing at that time? Who was singing?
John Bush. Yeah. I was a fan of the John Bush era. I think he only did those two albums. I think he did Sound of White Noise and Stomp 442, but,
that's cool as shit.
Yeah. The Mirage is not, it's obviously not a club anymore, but like it was a tiny little bar, and I want to say Chino still had his dreads. Don't quote me on that. I mean, I guess we'll quote me on it because we're recording. But but I want to say he still had his dreadlocks. So it was like, it was real early on. And that was kind of my first introduction. And I'm like, who are these guys?
Word. So they really, you felt it at that time even?
Yeah, they were. I was like, holy cow. I was lame and didn't get the CD right away. So it was... It took me a while to find it because, too, it's like at the time your best options are like Best Buy, and you don't
15.
Have a
meeting.
Yeah, and I'm that's so.
What am I going to do when I'm not masturbating today? Is what you're trying to figure out when you're 15. Yeah. So you saw them probably perform for like 25 minutes.
Yeah, it was real short. It wasn't very long.
And then saw them again at the it was probably a White Zombie show, right?
Yeah, it was probably the Pantera White Zombie show. It was the next time I saw them, and that's kind of was like, I mean, that's like, you know, old days, like you'd go see a band, you'd actually show up for the opening acts,
right?
And you were like,
although were you there for I Hate God?
Oh,
were
yeah,
they the opener.
Deftones was the opener.
They were the very first opener. Yeah, I Hate God had billing above them.
Yeah, pretty sure that's how that one worked because they were all, I was going to say.
And that was I've seen spring, so many, summer 96.
Yeah, it was.
So around the fur was, I got my
97. That was 97. I remember that one. That was 97. I think it was like the fall. I was in school.
Were you rocking with adrenaline at that point then?
Oh yeah, we were already diehard. I have pictures somewhere we skipped school to go. So when Around the Fur came out, we were already diehards. Me and I had like a crew of like three or four guys of us. So like just, I mean, we were diehard Tones fans, and we had to sneak out. Because Cheapo Records used to do their midnight releases, so I would sneak out of my bedroom window at like 11:30, and I'd have one of our friends come and grab us. I couldn't take my car because my mom would hear me leave. So I'd have one of my friends who was like, all right, he'd swoop me. I'd sneak out and we'd run to Cheapo and we would buy them at midnight. They would have all the new releases on Monday night. So Tuesday was the release day. So we went out and I got Around the Fur and I showed up the next day to school and I, my Discman, and I'm rocking my headphones between classes. And I felt like the coolest dude ever because like nobody in that building had heard the album yet. And nobody, half, I'd say 75, 80% of the people there wouldn't even know who the band was at that point. And it was really just like
you and your three other friends who were like,
yeah,
yeah, we all went, dog, you are the man.
We all went and got it. And then they come back and I'm like, I'm so jacked. Like we put it in the CD player, and it's like, and you're just like, oh my God, this is like, you're just like, it's just as good as the first one. And they kept getting better. And it was just, so we went when they came through and I couldn't even tell you who they came through with. But they did it was probably like a headlining show at First Ave or something like that. They did an in-store signing at, down in the Valley. Cause the station used to do, in stores all the time. But the thing is like they would do them at like 2 o'clock, 3 o'clock.
Right.
And it's like, I'm in school, I'm 17, So I'm like, well, so of course we write the fake note and we leave at like noon and we sneak out of school. And then my buddy went to another school and he went to a school in St. Paul and I was in the north suburbs. So I had to go pick him up on the way to down in the Valley in Golden Valley. And he snuck out too. So we got all these pictures and it's hilarious. Cause there's like, we'd done all kinds of in stores at that point. We'd done, Pantera and Korn and, every band that was kind of big at the, in the mid 90s. And like, we show up for Tones and it's like, there's like 20 people there.
No, right?
Yeah, it was crazy.
I've been asking in the conversations that I've had with folks, like, they've always been sort of the fourth or fifth band from their era. And yet here they are, still standing. And I think that that's truly a testament to both them and us, because we've been rocking with them and they've been doing their thing.
Right. That's exactly where the intrigue is they've been doing their thing. They're not like, they're not a metal band and they're definitely not a new metal band. That drives me nuts when people, call them a new metal band. I'm like, I don't know. I mean, maybe because he raps a little bit in some songs and in Adrenaline, it was like kind of like tried to lump them in there with like your Korns and your Limp Bizkits and stuff. And it's like, I don't think musically, like stylistically, like most of their stuff is nothing like that, especially when they hit, Around the Fur and they really started to get way more experimental and stuff. That's just those two, like that leap from Adrenaline to Around the Fur is just so different. Like it just changed. It kind of really starts to like, okay, now I see where you're going with this. And, obviously then that step from that to Pony is like, oh, thank you. This is amazing.
Yeah. Like the biggest payoff of all time almost, right? I mean,
oh yeah.
To take the band is like the little band that could in some ways.
It's hard for a band like one. There's a lot of bands that come out and just put a ripper out for their first album just because it's pure, it's just pure art and it's just everything that they've ever tried and wanted to do. And it's amazing. And then they go into the studio and they try and replicate that. And it's like, it's that same old sophomore slump. You never hear, I shouldn't say you never, but you hardly hear a band come out and put a second album out that's like even better. And then by the third, it's like, sometimes they're just finally starting to kind of like come in musically, like where they want to be. So sometimes that third album tends to be really good, but it's like when you just continually get better and better and better, it's like, wow, hats off to you. But after that second or third, it's like people expect, or bands try and do what people expect. Mm. And I don't think they've ever done that. It's every album is, hey, this is the kind of music we want to make. And if you like it, great. If you don't, okay.
Man, truer words have never been spoken. That band is, I think that's part of the reason why they've been able to continue to have the success that they've had, is because they're just going to do what they're going to do. And you could call it, you know, artistic license, or you could call it whatever you want, growth, or you could call it, you know, just whatever is going on in that moment in time. It's still never beholden to what music is doing, like what the industry is doing or what their peers are doing. It's always been just about what they are doing.
Yeah. And it's just, you know, and it just goes like, you see them on the, you know, on tour with Anthrax and Life of Agony. Okay, weird. You see them on tour with Pantera and White Zombie. You know, I've seen them with Limp Bizkit, you know, like I've seen them.
Wait, you've seen them with Limp Bizkit? Did you see them at Family Values then? And is that where you saw them with Limp Bizkit?
No, I think they did their own.
Right, let's talk about it. Hold on. So we got to come back to what you've been seeing. Like, so you saw them, at McDonald's, which is fucking incredible. Like to be able to get a 6-piece with some sweet and sour sauce and then walk outside and see Deftones is one of the coolest things I've ever heard in my life. And then you saw them, with White Zombie, Pantera, with the same year, like within a matter of months.
Months. Yeah. Within a month. They used to come through here a lot.
Well, and I've done my research in terms of the frequency that they've come around, because there was a stretch there in the mid late 90s where they were doing literally hundreds of shows a year. And they came around again in 98 at the Quest. That was.
Hold on. I've got that date. December 2nd
of 98. So by my estimation,
there's a set list.
That's the set list right there.
And there's my photo pass.
So were you a contest winner?
No.
No, you just.
I'm just a scammer is what I am, I guess. I always wanted to like get an in, but I didn't. I never played in any bands. I'm not musically talented. I don't really play any instruments. I just love music and I love rocking out. Well, I used to go through and look at the labels and what labels bands were on. And I'd reach out about joining street teams.
Fuck yeah, dude. And I joined a street team for Deftones in like fucking 2000 or something. Yeah. Yeah.
I wrote to everybody, and you know, some of them got back to me, some of them didn't. But then like one of the things I would do is, you know, if I got on a street team, I'd like watch all of their acts and like see who they're playing with. And I'd get into shows because an opening act. Well, one of them that I did was, Victory Records, and they were so tiny at the time in the early 90s, they didn't really pop off till Hatebreed. I mean, Hatebreed really made Victory Records what they are. And Snapcase was the opening. I was Snapcase and like, I think like Quicksand.
Dude, that show at the Quest.
Yeah, it was the show. They actually played two shows that day. So they had an early show and a late show. So they had an all age show, like an early all age show at like 5 or 6. And then they had a late show like 18 plus at like 9 o'clock.
Dude, yeah. Snapcase,
Quicksand, and Deftones. So like right there, you talk about like how they just do things differently. I'm like that set, that band, I mean, that's who they chose to go on tour with. It's like those three bands on the same bill is so weird, but it worked out great for me.
Makes so much sense and makes so much sense at the same time. Go ahead.
So it worked out for me because I got a hold of Victory and I reached out to the production company and told them that I was working for a local TV channel, and I was hoping to get filming passes and film, because I wanted to film Snapcase, and I was hoping that I'd be able to get cameras in there and film, not only film Snapcase, but film Deftones as well. And they gave me the passes, and they, you know, wrote right on the bottom Snapcase. And then the production guy was just like, or like the tour, must have been the Deftones tour manager, was like just on me, like, I need these cameras in my production office as soon as Snapcase is off the stage, da 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 da. And I'm like, okay, yeah, he was like real tight. So I was like, all right, I'm definitely not here to film Deftones, like, damn it, you know. But I One, I got in, I got the film snap case. I don't even know where those tapes are. Those are probably, I have a bin of tapes somewhere. I might still have those. But I was like, okay, fine. That's cool. Well, his production office was, do you ever go see shows at the Quest?
Oh yeah.
They had the Ascot room that upstairs. Yeah. That's where the entire Ascot room was the backstage. Like that where Deftones was that was their area. So we brought him up, and he wanted all the cameras and everything in his office in the back of the Ascot after Snapcase was done. So we filmed them the first time, filmed them the second time, and then when the shows were done, we had to go back up there to get to get our cameras after the show, because we couldn't go till after Tones were done. So we had to wait around, and we were waiting, and we got, you know, these photo passes, and people are like, yeah, not a problem. And eventually we just kind of had to like barge in, cause I had to go get our video cameras. And, we walk in, and it's, you know, it's post show. Everyone's kind of just chilling. Jay was sitting there meditating. I had rugs out, and he was just kind of like sitting there, no shoes on, just kind of like meditating. And then everybody else was sitting at this table. And we were just like, oh my God, this is so crazy. Like, what do we do? So we went and like we had to wait for this guy to get back to unlock the office. So we're just kind of sitting there. It's me and my buddy Jake, and we're sitting there. I'm like not going over by everybody else and not like, hey guys, can I have an autograph? And hey, like, we're just trying to like, you know, play it cool.
Right.
And we're sitting back there, and there's it's me and my buddy, and then there's these two chicks sitting at another spot kind of doing the exact same thing. And then there's like everybody from the band and the crew. And it's not like a small, you know, it was pretty big. It was, you know, pretty big space. And finally the two chicks come over and they start talking to me and my buddy. And I'm like, this is weird. I'm like, hey, what's up? You know, but like, kind of like, why are you talking to us when the band is right over there?
You know, that's Deftones, right? That.
Yeah, it's right there. They're right there. Well, this dude sitting at the table with them is like, hey. And we're like, he's not talking to us, is he? Well, there's nobody else in the room except for us. And I'm like, it's some dude. I kind of recognized him, but I'm like, and he's like, hey, you come here. And he's pointing to me, and I'm like, okay. So I go over and I'm like, I'm looking at him. I'm like, oh. And he goes, I know you. How do I know you? And I'm like, you know, I was like, oh, I know you. He was a tattoo artist at the shop that I got my first tattoo at. And I had just been there to get something else done. Like, I don't know, a couple weeks later, or maybe like a couple months before that. And I was talking, he worked at the shop. So he recognized me from going in and getting, and he was, I don't know how he knew the guys. I'm guessing it was knowing the artist who I don't think lives in the Twin Cities anymore, but knowing him, it was probably for party favors. Yeah. and he was like, hey, come over here, sit down. And so we sat down, and we were just like sitting in this round table, just sitting there chatting. And it was like the craziest. I can't tell you all the conversation we had, but it was amazing to me, because I'm just sitting there. I'm like, here's Deftones. Like, I love this band. And I'm just sitting here, just chilling, hanging out, drinking beers with these guys. Actually, they were big on vodka Gatorades was the thing that they kept talking about. And I'm like, that sounds disgusting, man. Like, I still don't even know if I've had a vodka.
There probably only like two at that time.
But we were the craziest part of all of it is, I mean, I, you know, there was funny. There's,
are you talking about the whole band too, is sitting there at the table? Like basically,
yeah,
like the
everybody,
whole,
everybody. Yeah. And it was like a big, like kind of outdoor kind of patio table. Cause you know, the Ascot room had that outdoor indoor vibe thing with the big fake tree and the fountain and stuff. We were sitting there and we were talking about all kinds of stuff. We were talking about movies, and Franco and I were like, we were like the only ones at the table that were talking about, like they were talking about Clockwork Orange, or we're talking about some movies and stuff. And I was like, I didn't like Clockwork Orange. I was just so weird. It's so intense and creepy. And Franco's like, yeah, I didn't either, man. That was, yeah. So we were talking about what we didn't like Clockwork Orange. But the craziest part was they started talking about being on, like, being on tour and like the craziness that they're seeing. And at one point they were talking, it had to have been the night before or like two nights before. They were on the bus and they had some people on the bus and they were like, man, it was crazy. And Chino, this is Chino telling the story. And he's like, man, it was crazy. We were on the bus. I don't even know what was going on. We had like a knife party last night, you know, cut a bitch here, cut a bitch there. And I was like, what did he just say? And then we leave and I'm like my buddy Jake, we were just sitting there talking. I'm like, the next day we're like, we were going to the U at the time and we were riding to class the next morning. And I'm like, we didn't get out of there until like 2 or 3 in the morning. It was crazy. But I'm like, wasn't that weird? He was talking about like cutting people on the tour bus or something. He was like, yeah, I don't remember the full. I remember him talking about knife party. Then comes White Pony and the song Knife Party. I was like, oh my God, he was talking about that when we were, I was like,
that's fucking crazy, man.
It was like 2 days. Literally... It was 2 days. Or I want to say, if you've got your total list there, I want to say they played a week later back in.
Really?
Yeah. I want to say they played a week later at Roy Wilkins for, it was like 93X Christmas or Xmas the ball or something like
the Nutcracker. But that was that the White Pony promotional, or was that when you're talking about, had to have been pre White Pony though, right? That was like,
90. Yeah, this was, I could be wrong.
Let's see that set list seemed, again.
Yeah.
I just want to sort of eyeball Lotion, Summer, Root, Nosebleed, Jesus Christ, Mascara. That's fine. Slow it down, finally. And then, hold on, what does that say? Fur is below Mascara, and then yep. MX, Seven Words.
Look at how early they play Seven Words.
Board, Birthmark, Engine 9. What is after Die?
Die.
And yeah, then Fist, Be Quiet, and Head Up, Closer. Head Up was often a closer in that time.
Yeah.
Man, body blow after body blow after body blow. And that's
well, that is so amazing. That summer, though.
That summer, they were on Warp Tour.
98, they were on the summer. They were on the Warp Tour, which was also the one that came through that merged with Ozfest in Somerset. It's one of the craziest shows ever because you have Ozfest, which is a big ticket thing itself, Warp Tour with 50 some bands itself, played the same venue the same day, and your one ticket got you into both of them, and it was $35. The craziest part about it was that Soulfly, that was like, I think Soulfly's first big tour was Ozfest. Max came over to the stage. He came over to the Warp Tour side. So Warp Tour was set up the hill, and they had like all them semis like we're talking about. They had like 4 or 5 of them in a half circle. So every band is like, if you stood in the right spot, you could just turn and see every show.
Right.
And it was like, you know, Crappy Misfits, Rancid, NOFX, you know, like they had every band that you could think of. And then, you know, Deftones played over on this little one, and it was one of the biggest crowds. And it was just this tiny little stage. And of course, they had the Chino at somewhere. I've got like a bunch of, we used to bring those little handy cam, like the little disposables. Yeah. I used to bring those and I'd sneak up front. I'd get my way up front and I'm just like taking pictures. At some point, I have a sequence of him climbing the stack and jumping off. So, I don't think it was to end the show, but it was at some point. It might have been to close the show down. Max Cavalera came over and played Head Up with them. And it was like, it was the most amazing thing, you know, as a diehard Sepultura fan my whole life. Yeah. You know, it's like, oh my God. Like, and then a huge Tones fan, like to see them both play was awesome.
What do you think? Just a fanboy question. What do you think would be a bigger experience though? Seeing Max come and join or seeing Maynard?
That's a tough one. Honestly, I probably Maynard. It'd be otherworldly because, I mean, that's my favorite. I mean, that's probably like top 4 or 5 songs for me, like at all. Yeah. Like one of my favorite songs ever. It's so good.
So what's your favorite album? What is your favorite Deftones album? I know I always feel like a dick when I ask this question because it's like picking your favorite child, but.
Oh, that might be easier. No, just kidding.
Only got so many of those. Don't have nine to choose from.
I probably got to go with Adrenaline just because that was the one that got me hooked. Yeah. And it reminds me of a different time, like a special time. Like I was, 15, I had no cares in the world. And then, when I got my first car, it had a tape deck in it and I had a tape that, I had Adrenaline full on one side and full on the other, like the full album fit on one full side of the tape. So I didn't have to like rewind it. That's so I just funny. Put it on there. I'd have to say Adrenaline is probably, but Pony is so good. It's such a good album. I think overall, if you have to, I think Pony's probably a better album, but my favorite is probably, it's just so raw.
Yeah. Yeah. It feels raw in retrospect too, especially given how artistic and well thought out like the last few albums have been. The Sergio era albums have been definitely their most polished. Not that the self-titled and I love the self-titled as much as anything else, but like the acumen to the art has been
right
higher, you know what I mean?
What an underrated one album too, by the way. Like self-titled gets passed over.
Dude.
Like, oh my God. If people just pass it over, like, it's like, oh yeah. Okay. Well, it's not as good as the last one. And it's just like,
no, fuck.
Go back and listen to it. It is a jam, man. It is so good.
So that has been something that I have preached for as long as people have brought up the band at all. Self-titled, so underrated, so heavily underrated. Bloody Cape. Fuck right. Out of here. Needles and Pins. What a bop. Talk about gangsta leaning with that. Like, get out of here. Get out of here. Hexagram, Minerva. Oh, yeah. Are you kidding me?
That's Minerva's a, that's one a of the jam. Good,
man.
Did you ever get to catch them when they were doing, when they would do Say It Ain't So? They would interject it in the middle
of
seven words. They play the whole song.
One of my favorite, I love it so much. Like, but they would do that all the time in like the middle of seven words. I feel like they interjected like a lot of different songs live. They did Say It Ain't So. I know they were doing Kill You by Eminem for a minute.
Like, really?
Well, it might not have been during seven words, but there's like been different moments in time where they would do different shit like that. And
just because,
How I Could Just Kill a Man from Cypress Hill. They've done.
I've heard that one. I haven't seen that one, but the first couple of times. I've seen them do the Say It Ain't So a couple of times, and one time it was just like one verse or so, and then they kick back in and finish the second half of seven words, and then like I think the last time I saw them do it, they played the entire song, like the entire Weezer song, and then come back to finish seven words. Like,
that fucking rules. And I don't give a shit what Weezer wants to do or say.
No, it's great.
Weezer fucking owns Weezer's version of Weezer. It forever will own that shit.
All the time seeing this band. This band is such an awesome, amazing live band. You know, it's like, and you know, back in the day, Chino never played a guitar in any of the, you know, like when he would bring a guitar, you know, play a guitar on one of the songs, we would all freak out like, oh, he's gonna play guitar, all right. You know, like we're. It's like all that stuff just trips me out, but like, you know, he did that thing, you know, he wrapped the microphone around his hand like 10 times and just had like the longest mic cord, and he would just half the time, I mean, it sounds weird that their show was amazing, but he would like sit, you know, he would like kneel down on the stage and just kind of like sing into the mic, like just kind of in rock back and forth by himself in the corner, you know, you're like this is, I mean, and it was just, then he'd get up and he'd just jump around and then he'd be up on the stack and diving off at like right at the key parts of songs and pure energy, adrenaline.
No doubt. Right. Dude, I've taken up a ton of your time already. I need to wrap this up so that we can conclude our conversation here. But how I want to wrap it up is with one question that is inspired by Something that Chino pointed out on a podcast not long ago. He said that the reason that he tweets out YouTube links to music that he likes is because he thinks the best thing that anybody can get from their favorite artist or somebody that they follow is the music that they like. Like, here's what I like. Go check this out. You know what I mean? So in that spirit, I'm going to ask you for three recommendations. And this can be literally anything. It can be old or new. It can be music. It could be movies. It could be beer. It could be books. It could be porn or whatever you feel inclined. Three recommendations.
Three recommendations. Well, one, I have to like just kind of a band that I've just been listening to a ton lately. Last year, when we could travel and go do things and be places, my wife took me to go see a different band. This band was opening, and I'd seen them probably about three or four times within like a 2 or 3 month window. They just came through the cities a ton. But it's Iron Cheek.
Iron Cheek?
Yeah, IronCheic. They're a punk band from New York, but they're very, I mean, the singer is pretty melodic and I definitely check out You Can't Stay Here.
All right.
So that's a good album. They got a few of them, but that one's pretty good. Let's see, what else would I I've been drinking a lot of rum lately, as you can tell by my obviously the listeners can't see the
you got a little bit of rum back there.
The booze on my wall, but my go-to rum that I've been drinking is Diplomatico Exclusiva, Reserva Exclusiva. It's like $30 a bottle. It's not crazy. The nice thing about rum is you're not quite to the whiskey level yet, where everyone's like hoarding all the crazy stuff and bottles cost $200. You can get a world-class rum like that, and it's a sipping rum. It's not like mix it with your Coke or anything like that. It's pour a couple fingers and throw a couple ice cubes in there and just kind of sip on it. It's not, it's not Captain Morgan. It goes down real smooth and super easy. Let's see. And a third thing, huh?
Yeah. This
is a hard one. I just, between drinking, music and hockey, I guess. I don't even know how to watch the Stanley Cup finals.
You could, if that's what you want to throw down, that's what you got.
Watch the Stanley Cup, man. If it ain't booze, hockey, and music, I don't even know if I know what it is.
Fucking A, man. That is the perfect way to sign off here. Okay, a couple of things. Joe's knife party story is wild, right? The date of that show at The Quest was December 2nd, 1998. Deftones did return like a week later, December 13th, but as far as I can tell, they did not play Knife Party at that show. However, they did play the intro to a demo version of Pink Maggot, which is pretty crazy. And they did that again in Sacramento later that week, December 18th, 1998, a whole year and a half before White Pony came out, mind you. Also, December 18th of 98 in Sacramento, they covered To Have and To Hold by Depeche Mode with Sergio Vega. Pretty cool, right? All right, before we go, Joe's got one more story to tell, and it doesn't have to do with Deftones, but it blows my mind every time I hear it. This is Joe's story about meeting Dave Grohl. Please tell the Dave Grohl story so that I have that on record.
Okay, I did tell you this one, though.
Yes, you told me, and yeah. Which is actually, it's rather, I don't know, momentous or something now. Here we are chatting together when usually the time that we get to sit together and hang out and rap
would be right now.
Would be right now during the state fair. So
it's, and just pile on the beers back.
Indeed.
I'm on a, you know what, I can crack on it. Here, I'm going to drink a strawberry lemonade truly, I guess.
Oh, all right. Okay. Let's get into it.
Yeah, I'm on a little weight loss challenge. So I've been watching my calories, but.
Hey, in a pandemic, I'm not 100, mad.
I can burn 100 right here. Here's good.
Fucking A.
Mm. So I became, over the years of going to punk rock shows and hanging out at the Triple Rock and actually flying to Vegas the one time, one of the times I was in Vegas for the punk rock bowling tournament, when it actually, because it's still a thing, but it's a huge music festival now. Back in the early 2000s, it was a actual bowling tournament that was put on by like Fat Wreck and BYO Records, and we would go out there with the guys from Triple Rock because they would, the Triple Rock had a team, and we would sit there and we just kind of whatever. I wound up becoming good buddies with the guys from Against Me. And, you know, fast forward a bunch of years and they started to, you know, they released the second album, third album, and they started getting really big, and have had, you know, pretty good success. So where they only have to be, they're touring, they're professional musicians, which is pretty awesome. Not bad for a bunch of dudes. Just like the party. Well, they opened for Foo Fighters. They came through 2008, I believe, because we were pregnant with our youngest, or just had our youngest. I can't remember the timing on it, but I went to the show, and they it was Foo Fighters, Against Me, and Serge Tanakin, or whatever, I don't even know how to pronounce it. from System of a Down. Yeah, he was doing his solo stuff, and Against Me went on first. And then we had after party passes, so we had to wait till everything got done, and then they came and got us, and we went backstage. We're hanging out backstage, and there, you know, it was a couple hours before, you know, between maybe like when they got done and when Foo Fighters actually went on. And those guys are so used to touring on with a van and a trailer, so they got to pack real smart. Got room for a backpack, and that's about it.
Right
now they're like on a major label. And they're touring on a major tour. You're not allowed to bring a van. You're in a tour bus. So they've got a big bus. They've got all this room, and they have no idea what to do with it. So one of them came up with the idea of just, I think it was Andrew, was just like, let's bring a foosball table. They had a foosball table that they stuffed underneath the bus and take the legs off and just kind of put it in there. And then when they're loading in, they bring a foosball table into their dressing room. Well, they like, as the tour went on, they kind of became like the party dressing room. So if anybody wanted to like party and hang out, they would all go to the Against Me room.
Play foosball.
But we were sitting there, we're just, you know, shooting the shit, having a couple of beers, when the dressing room door, and now it's like, this is at the Target Center. So like their dressing room was really like a locker room. So you had the shower, it's a walk-in shower, bathroom, all thing, you know, and thing. But like somebody kicked in, like the front door just gets kicked in to the dressing room, and you just hear, "Who wants a shotgun of beer?" And I look up, and it's Dave Grohl with 2 6-packs of Coors Light Tall Boys. And I'm like, I do. I do, Dave Grohl. I want a shotgun of beer. So he's like, all right. And he tosses me a beer, and there's like probably like 3 or 4 of us, and it's you know, it's normally the same cast back there. It's like me and a couple other people that just like are always at every one of the Against Me shows. We just kind of all see each other, but we're all like, they have a few local friends. And so it was like us little crew. And like, we go into the little shower bathroom area, cracking them and shotgun them and throwing them on the ground, high fiving. I'm like, this is the craziest moment of my life. I just shotgun beers with Dave Grohl. And then he walks back. He's like, hey, what's going on, guys? Like, hey, you know, good set tonight and this and that. He goes, hey, who wants to play foosball? And I'm like, well, I do. I do, Dave Grohl. Whatever you want to do. Like, and he goes, all right, me and you against you two and like 2 other people. So we're playing foosball. And he's like, do you want the front or the back? We got the goal? And I'm like, yeah, I'll take the goal. He goes, you any good? I go, no. I'm like, I probably played once before ever. He goes, that's fine. Let's see how we do. I'm like, okay. And the whole time I'm like sitting there playing foosball, I'm just kind of like looking over, and I'm like, that guy was in Nirvana. Like, there were 3 dudes in Nirvana. This is one of them. And the other guy, like one of them's not around anymore. And I'm like, holy crap. And I've never been a Foo Fighters fan. I've never, like, it's never really been my thing. I always felt like they were just a little too commercially poppy for me to the most extent, because I was, you know, I was into the heavier stuff, man, you know, like, but I was a big Nirvana fan, you know.
You understood the moment.
And I'm like, this is the most insane thing I've ever, like, I'm sitting here hanging out with Dave Grohl, and then all of a sudden the door opens up again, and it's like, you guys partying in here? And it was Pat Smear, and I was like, oh my God,
that's
the Germs. I was like, you are the Germs. You were in Nirvana, and I had to like be, I had to play cool, because I'm there as a guest of my friends, and I'm just like, oh yeah, man, like, no, what's up? But yeah, I ended up like sitting and spending like, I don't know, half hour talking to Dave Grohl about kids. He, I think, has a kid real close to the same age as mine.
Yeah.
Cause I was like, yeah, we just had our second, or we're having our second, or, I can't remember, but he was like, well, hold on, let me show you. And he goes and he grabs his computer and comes and sets his computer down, opens it up. And he's like, hold on. He pulls up pictures. He's like, here's us like playing in the pool. Like, and he's just showing me pictures, and it's me and him just sitting there like two dudes drinking beers. And the whole time I'm going, this is goddamn Dave Grohl. Like, this is Dave Grohl. Like, this, how is this? And he's like, well, we got, and then some, like a stagehand, it's like some guy comes in, handler comes in, he's like, hey, you know, X, you know, T minus whatever to showtime. He's like, oh, okay. He's like, hey, I got to go get ready for the show. You're going to come watch? I'm like, yeah, of course. And I'm like, at that moment, I'm like, all of a sudden, the biggest Foo Fighters fan ever. Like, this dude is a trip. And he's just like,
for a Monkey Wrench.
Yeah, exactly. I'm like, well, play that one because that one's heavy. I like that one, I guess. So we go up there, and I'm like, yeah, I wanna watch some of the show. And James from Against Me is like, I wanna go to the Triple Rock. And I'm like, I know, can we just watch a little bit? He's like, oh, I watch this show every night. I'm like, yeah, I'm sure you do. But he asked me to like come watch some, and I kind of feel like I should. So we watch like three, like they're like, you know, they go out there and they're doing their thing, and I'm just like looking out, and I don't know what the Target Center holds, 20,000. I don't know. I mean, or no, it'd be like, I don't know, probably 10, 15. I don't know, whatever. But they got the big Eagle ramp, you know, like the big Eagle ramp or whatever it's called. And he's like out there just rocking away. And I'm like they're lighting up, you know, the house lights keep flashing and showing all the people. I'm like sitting on the side of the stage. I'm like, holy shit, this is insane. I'm like, I could never get up in front of that many people and do anything. And this guy's just like, ah, not a problem. And, you know, eventually James like, oh, can we go? I'm like, yeah, it's fine. And I'm like, please. I saw like three songs on the side of the stage, and it was like, I immediately went home and like downloaded some Foo Fighters. My taste have probably changed. I'm probably a big Foo Fighters fan now. And I'm like, and it turns out I'm a Dave Grohl fan. He is like, every video you see him doing stuff, and just everyone's like, he's the greatest person. He absolutely. He's like, you know, where everybody's at this point seen the Kiss guy video where like, come on up stage, Kiss guy. Like, I don't think he doesn't put on a different persona at all. Like, he didn't even need to go in their room and talk to those guys, and let alone bring beers to go shotgun beers with.
I buy it 1,000%.
So, it was so crazy. I went home.
That's cool as shit. That's cool.
My wife's sick of hearing me tell the story.
Foosball with a Foo Fighter. Probably not many folks that can say they've done that. Thanks to Joe for spending like 2 hours talking with me. We even did a deep dive into adrenaline, which was fun as hell, but I decided maybe we'll save that for another time. Nonetheless, Joe's amazing, and I can't wait for the next Minnesota State Fair so we can crack a beer and talk shit again. Next week, my guest is Vezanik, founder of Deftones Live, and after that, my guest is Cyrus King from This Be The Verse. He's going to tell me what it was like going home from Wembley in 2003 with Chino Moreno's guitar. Crazy story. My name is Woody. Thank you for listening to Deftones, and thank you for listening to Change in the House of Pods.